The time period I want to deal with is Bayit Sheni. Okay? Bayit Sheni. Now, Korban Bayis Rishon, actually, Korban Bayis Sheni comes about through the hands of whom? Who?
I mean,
who destroyed the second?
Romans.
Jews. Sad part is that Rome doesn't enter Yerushalayim as conquerors, but rather invited guests. Alexander Yanai was the king in Israel. Alexander Yanai was a tzduki. Okay? He dies. He is succeeded by his wife.
Nice.
Okay? What's the name of the woman that ruled over Israel during Bayit Sheni? We have a street named after here in Yerushalayim. Anyone know? Shlomtzion Hamalka. Okay, Shlomtzion Hamalka. Now, the cool thing is her real name was Shlomit. Okay? But she was so beloved by the people of Yerushalayim that she was like Shlomtzion. Tzion is Yerushalayim. The people of Israel loved her so much. Shlomtzion Hamalka. She was the brother. Her brother was Rav Shimon ben Shetach. Okay, Rav Shimon ben Shetach was her brother. And
she
now
Jewish?
That she... Yes, absolutely.
Where's the Shimon ben Shetach from?
We have him in the Perkei Avot. He's what, like the Zugot? He's with Tanoim. Okay? So, no. Alexander Yanai was a Jew, a Tzduki, Sadducee, believed only in Torah Shebichtav and not in Torah Shebaal Peh.
Ooh, that's
okay? He dies, succeeded by his righteous wife, Shlomtzion Hamalka. And now she invites her brother back and he starts to be more in charge of what's going on religiously. And the Sanhedrin changes. There's like a reorganization of the Sanhedrin. Beforehand, Stukim was sort of in charge. Now the Prushim are in charge. Now, who are the Prushim? They're what we call the rabbis. But the Prushim are, in English, anyone know how to say it?
I read a book about it, I don't remember.
The Pharisees.
The Pharisees.
Now, when we were given the name the Prushim, it was derogatory. The Stukim named us Prushim the same way that Orthodox was considered derogatory. Oh, Orthodox, you're like old-fashioned, rigid. And here now, Prushim, what was the idea? You guys separate because of all your laws of Tumah V'Tahara. There's constant separation from other people. You're Porush, like Porush Min HaTzibur. And what did they do? Just like the Orthodox turned it around as like a badge of honor. So the Prushim turned it around as a badge of honor and said, yes, Prushim, from the word Perush, we use that Perush, Torah Shebaal Peh. We don't just read, you know, Ayin Tachat Ayin. We don't just read the Psukim literally. We have a Perush. We are the Perushim. Now, the Tzdukim mostly were wealthy, and they ended up buying the position of Kohen Gadol. That's why we know the famous Gemara that talks about that we tie a rope to the Tzdukim because he go into the Beit HaMikdash and Yom Kippur, into the Kodesh Kodashim, and would die because he wasn't worthy and he would have to be pulled out. Yeah.
But how do you just buy it? Don't you like...
No, it seems like it's a sad thing. What happened was, it was like, they were like asking the Romans, they were buying it from... The Romans were making decisions. Think how awful that would be. That would be as if in Italy, when Mussolini was like the dictator, he would decide who would be the pope. Can you imagine? Like, he would tell, like, you know, I'm choosing my man for to be a pope. That's what was going on here. You know, the Romans basically picking, based on how much money they were getting, all right, we're going to choose that guy over there. He's going to be Kohen Gadol. Okay, they bought it. Now, the Tzdukim basically were temple-focused. I'll get to you in a second. Since they were temple-focused, when there was a Churban, it sort of dies out. Because that was, like, their main thing. Once they have the Churban, now it gets reincarnated about 1,000 years in the guise of who? What's the name of the people that sort of also once again period of the Gaonim?
The Karaites.
The Karaites, okay? But the Tzdukim themselves sort of die out. Like I said, they're reincarnated later. Yes, what do you want to say?
Have you ever heard the famous Cohen joke?
I don't know.
This guy goes to Rabbi and says, I want to be a
Yeah, guy. I know the joke. Okay.
My dad's Cohen.
Yeah. Okay,
best
good.
Best joke in the world.
Yes. Pretty old joke. Now,
thanks.
Shlomtzion Hamalka is one of the three women that rule over all of Israel. In the period of the Mishkan, what woman rules over all of Israel? She's in Sefer Shoftim.
Miriam. No, that's
Deborah.
Good. Easy money,
though. Good, easy money.
Ruler? She's a tank. She's
she
a
rules
tank.
Over Israel. She's a Shoftetet. She's a Shoftetet. In Sefer Melachim, we have a woman that becomes the king.
Isabel.
Nope.
Oh,
another wicked person. She kills children in order to become the king. She was married to Yehoram. And then her son Ahaziah takes over. And then when he dies, she takes over. Yoash takes over after us. Her name was Atalia. Atalia. And now in Bayit Sheni, we have Shlomtzion HaMalka. And then, fast forward 2,000 years, you have Golda Meir. But these were like the... Golda Meir was great, so it was Deborah. I mean, she was good. She was American, so I sort of have an affinity towards her. But she messed up during the Yom Kippur War. So we have... not now. We have Shlomtzion HaMalka, who's ruling. Now, she dies. 67 BCE. She names her oldest son to succeed her. Her oldest son's name is John Hyrcanes. John Hyrcanes, the second, is her successor. But her younger brother, Aristobulus, rebels and a civil war breaks out. I think I probably told you once, when I first year that I'm here in Israel, I went with my wife out to eat, and like we're at a looking for the restaurant, and I said, what's the address? She goes, on Aristobulus. I said, must be around here somewhere. She goes, how do you know? I said, we're on John Hyrcanes. I'm sure they put it right near. They were brothers. They fought. She goes, what? I said, sure enough, it was right there. I said, see, my knowledge of Jewish history. Help me find the restaurant. Comes in handy when you least expect it. So,
snap that rope.
Yes. Unfortunately, I didn't know how to snap as well as you, so I didn't do that. Now, their famous Gemara in Megillah.
Shut up,
that Ariel, may or may not have already learned. I don't know. Gemara in Megillah tells a story about there was a siege around Yerushalayim.
Ooh.
Who was the siege? John Hyrcanes was outside. And who was inside? Aristobulus. Aristobulus was inside.
What's up?
And
inside?
Okay, don't remember right now. Aristobulus was inside. And what did they do? The people on the outside, every day, the people inside lowered money. And the people outside gave them an animal for them to bring out as a carbon. And one zakein. Ah, it's in the parak, the second parak. Okay? It talks about the... It's in the second parak. Because it's
the end of it.
It talks about the languages. Because he says that he was opposed to... the zakein said that if you want to be successful, stop giving them the carbonot. And he also said it in like this Greek language. Right? And they cursed at anyone who spoke Greek. And and then what did he do instead? He gave
a pig.
And the pig stuck its feet in the walls, and all of Israel shook, 400 parsot. So this was this time period. That whole Gemara that we learned in Megillah. I don't remember the daf. I don't know.
Yeah,
Okay.
I don't know if it was
in Megillah.
It's not in Megillah? Maybe it's Yerushalmi. I don't know.
Okay.
Rob knows all the shas.
I don't know anything. I don't know anything. But anyway. See, I don't even know. I thought it was in Megillah. It's not in Megillah. I think it's in Megillah. Anyway. So this Gemara, this famous Gemara, which you guys don't remember, so I guess it's not that famous.
No, it's famous Gemara.
It's between these two warring brothers. Now, here's the sad thing.
It's always between two brothers.
Rome had conquered Syria, and the brothers turned to the general. Who is a general? We've heard his name, Pompey. They turn to Pompey, and they say, you decide, who do you think should be the ruler here over Israel? And Pompey chooses John Hyrcanes. Now, why did he choose John Hyrcanes? Because he was weaker. Okay? Now, then John Hyrcanes invited Rome to come into Israel. But he said, listen, I still think that Aristobulus is going to give me problems, but if you guys are here, he won't mess with me. So how did Rome get into Israel? Invited by the Jews. And after a very short amount of time, John Hyrcanes just became like a glorified tax collector for the Romans. And the last, century and a half or so, who was running the show here in Israel?
Romans.
The Romans.
So also they didn't want to get conquered. They want there to be a war.
Okay. So what we have here is a sad thing that the Romans who conquered Eretz Israel didn't come in as conquerors. They were invited in by the Jews. All right.
Nice.
Now, the next important person that we have to deal with is a madman. What?
Josephus
is around here. But the person I want to talk about, who's the crazy person I want to talk about? Herod. Herod in Hebrew, Hordus. Herod was a madman. He called himself Herod the Great. We would say Herod the Not So Great. He was not so great. Okay, Herod was nuts. He ruled, I'll define nuts in a moment. He ruled from 37 BCE to 4 CE, the same time of Hillel and Shammai. Just to give us, time reference, this is the time that Hillel and Shammai were...
Hillel and Shammai were in the time of Eastern English?
Yes.
Yes.
Now you know. Now, what do you know about Herod? Herod's grandparents were Idumeans. And they lost a war to the Jews. What Jews? The Hashmonaim. And here, even though we sit around and think that, oh, we don't do forced conversions, they forced all the Edomians to convert to Judaism. So Herod's grandparents are forced converts. Okay. Now, he, Herod, was Roman educated, and he convinces them, appoint me as king of Israel. You know, like, we sort of like, we're boys, like, we went to school together. Appoint me, I'll be the king of Israel. And they do. And he kills many members of Sanhedrin. Okay, because he felt they were saying, you're not really Jewish. You know, your parents aren't really converts. Like, you're not really Jewish. He didn't like that. And they felt you're not worthy to be king. And he kills out the entire family of the Hashmonaim. He ends the dynasty of the Hashmonaim. He marries the one last remaining person from the Hashmonaim, Miriam from the Hashmonaim. So he should have Yichus. Like, you know, he married into royalty. But she despises him as much as he desires her.
She was suicidal.
Okay, yeah. Eventually, according to the historians, he kills her. According to the Gemara, she kills herself.
Why didn't she just kill her?
And according to the Gemara, she was on the roof and said, anyone who claims that they are from the Hashmonaim, they're liars. I'm the last remaining Hashmonaim, and I'm ending it now. And she jumps.
Their son, no?
Okay. I don't know if she had a son. He, you know how weird he was? He preserves her body in honey for several years, even has sex with her. Okay? Yeah. Finally, she stopped saying no. Okay, so he... Wow, that was recorded. Now, he
that's
so he was nuts, okay? He was a madman. Now, at one point, he asks Baba Ben Buta what he can do for tshuva. And he says, beautify the Beit HaMikdash. And he does. And he works for almost a decade. He uses 10,000 workers. He expands and renovates the Beit HaMikdash and the walls around Yerushalayim and some other areas, right? Every time you can see all this Herodian stone, he had a certain way of, you know, have that borders around the stone. So this was
you could do tshuva Herod. For that?
I don't know if you get total tshuva, but this is what he was told and this is what he did. Okay. Then we have what's known as the Great Revolt. The Great Revolt, the year 66 to the year 70 of the Common Era. Okay, and this leads to the Korban. Okay, the Jews rebel against the Romans, and eventually the Romans swear the Beit HaMikdash. Now, why? You look in the history books, you see lots of different reasons. Reason number one, ideological. The Romans were introducing a pagan lifestyle, and the Jews rebelled against it. Reason number two, they desecrated holy places and objects. They burnt the Sefer Torah. Roman soldiers would expose themselves in the Beit HaMikdash. Reason number three, as we said before, they were appointing the Kohen Gadol. They didn't really take too kindly the fact that the Romans were appointing who should be Kohen Gadol. Reason number four, the Roman procurator, a guy named Gaius Florus, was taking way too much money, and he was going into temple treasury, taking money. The Jews mocked him. They would pass around little pushkas saying, Gaius doesn't have money. Guys, we're taking up a fund. So put a little GoFundMe thing, you know. Let's see what we can do. Nebuch, the guy, he's so poor. So they were mocking him. That certainly didn't help. And he responded by whipping and crucifying Jewish leaders. Okay? And Jews rebelled. They rebelled. They were led by different factions known as... Now, they all hated the Romans, but they were different factions fighting. Some of the names you might have heard of, Birionim, or the Kanaim, or like it would be the Zealots, or the Sicarim. And they actually win the first battle. Eventually, there is a devastation. Basically, it's destroyed in the year 70. Over a million Jews are killed. And what's interesting is, none of that is mentioned in the Gemara. In the Gemara, we all learn about it on Tisha B'Av, Gemara and Gittin. Why was the Beis Hamikdash destroyed? Because of Kamtza Bar Kamtza, because of Sinat Chinam. Right? This is what we're taught. And I guess what the Gemara wants to tell us is that these are things that we can control. We can control how we treat fellow Jews. Okay, maybe some of the other things, I don't know. But what's the famous story of Kamtza Bar Kamtza?
He invites him to the wedding, and he says, get out.
Right, and that wrong guy comes, kicks him out. So all of this, these are the lessons that we are learned, that if we want to know, like, you know, if you learn Jewish history, you see that the Gemara was not making things up. We say Sinat Chinam caused the Churban. So you read the history and you see that these Biryonim, these Sikari, these Kanayim that wanted a fight, and other people said, no, we have enough, you know, supplies to exist here. We'll wait out the Romans. They'll give up on the siege. What did they do? They burned down all the storehouses and said, now, how long can you wait? Right? Forcing their hand, telling the Jews that they had to go and fight. And who knows how many lives were lost? Who knows what might have happened differently? I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. But if you want to talk about Sinat Chinam, this is a good example where they destroyed their own food. Okay.
Who burned these stores?
These zealots that wanted to go and fight against the pacifists. The people said, there's no need to fight. We can't defeat them. Just wait them out. We have enough supplies here to wait. They'll give up. You know, how long are they going to stand there in the siege? They'll leave. And they said, no, we have to fight them. We have to fight them. And they burned down the food supply. Burned down the food supply. And they ended up going to war. And as I said, we had a Churban and a million lives lost. And then the last time period that I want to talk about, and that is Masada. Second to last. Masada. Okay? Are you guys with us when we went on the Masada trip? Was it on Shana?
No, I went last year, though.
Okay. So
there's a big story in Masada.
Okay. Yeah. One of Herod's, Masada was the last stronghold. Okay? Herod, we said before, built up things. He built for himself this fortress on the top of Masada. Okay?
He had a few of them, but this is
what happened was, yeah, when the Romans attacked one fortress, Jews left and went to another. They attacked. This was the last remaining fortress. This was it. There was no place else to go. And the Romans, they already destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. They already killed a million Jews. Why do they care? There's 960 Jews on top of Masada. Who cares? Just go home. You won. Why is there a need? The need was, who was up there in Masada? The very same zealots that started the whole war. The very same zealots that gave the Romans a defeat in their first battle. And therefore, they're not going to let them, you know, survive. They're going to teach them a lesson. Ironically, this fortress was built by Herod, who had been chosen by the Romans, you know, to be leader. But this was the fortress that they now had to conquer. When the battering rams were progressing, Elazar ben Yair calls for mass suicide. We have all of this because Josephus writes a whole story based on a few survivors who tell us that he gathered everyone together and he said, we see them, we see that they're coming up, we see that we have no way that we're going to survive. And he makes this impassioned speech and he says, never slaves to the Romans, we're only slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We're Avadim Ovdei Hashem. We're never going to be slaves to the Romans. We'd rather die as free men than be taken by the Romans. Who knows how they'll abuse our wives and our daughters. We should take our own lives. This is what Yair, this is what Elazar ben Yair said on the top of Masada. Okay? And according to Josephus, they drew lots and each person killed another person. At the end, the last people, you know, would have to kill themselves. But this was the famous story. Better to die as free men. What?
Easier, your Evan Hashem, and then yourself.
Because, now, if you can look into this, there's a lot of halachic literature if this was permissible or not. People fight back and forth about it. Okay? Seems very easy to just say, well, suicide's usher. You have people arguing. Shaul HaMelech said, ach. Right? Shaul knew that he would be tortured. Shaul knew that he'd be paraded around as a king, would be a chil Hashem. And therefore, he took his life. According to the Midrash, it was okay that he took his life. Many people want to apply maybe this to the people on Masada. Like I said, you can find it. I see over there a tradition periodical. Back when it first started coming out, there was an edition that had like an article where someone wrote, and there's a rejoinder, a person argued, and it was like back and forth. Okay, when I was in YU, it was a cool thing. They ended up finding, that, I guess someone went through the attic, and they found all these old tradition periodicals, and they were like a dime a piece. It's like they had piles and piles. of like, you know, whatever, of each edition. And I saw people sitting there like looking on the back cover to see what the articles were. And I said, for a dime, how could you go wrong? I just took one of each. I said, here's my $1.50. You know, like, I took 15. I said, at home, I'll be able to check and see, like, if I find even one. It was so worth it. Anyway, there was, like, pretty much everyone, there was something really good in it. I thought it was so silly. People sitting there thinking, oh, should I waste my 10 cents on this? I just, okay, I'll take one of each. So in one of the ones that I had, it had, like I said, three articles back and forth arguing whether or not this was halakhically permissible. I don't remember right now the names of the people who wrote the articles, and I don't remember all the arguments, but I'm sure you can find it online. If you look up tradition articles, I probably even forget tradition. Just look up, you know, was Masada halakhically permissible? I'm sure lots of stuff will come up, you know, with people weighing in. You know, this was, for many of the early Zionists, an inspiration. Before we got the Kotel, a lot of army ceremonies were up on Masada. And there was a poem about Masada that was an inspiration in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Okay? Better to die as free men than to be slaves. We're going to go out fighting. Right? So, okay. So, Masada was, and still continues today, it's a very visited place in Israel because of this historical significance.
Nobody knows that.
People not. Sure. People not. Okay. Last thing. Bar Kokhba. Okay. So now we fast forward to 132 to 135 of the Common Era. Okay. It's not so strange it's around then, because just like the previous Gullus was about 70 years now, okay, we're working towards, about 70-ish years later, let's start fighting against the Romans, see if we can build the Beit HaMikdash, you know, around then. So you have a revolt. Who is the name? What is the name of this general? Shimon ben Kosiba. Okay, we now know his name for sure. We have letters written by him in the Israel Museum. He was called by his fans. What?
He just found like helmets and swords from that revolt.
Yep. And we fans of his, like Rabbi Akiva, referred to him as Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba would be a play on the words Kochav Rach Mi Yaakov that we have in Parshat Balak. You know, it would be like this star shooting out. This is a reference to Mashiach. Bar Kokhba, as Mashiach, is that guy. And this is what they call those, his detractors, called him Bar Koziba, the deceiver. You know, nothing's going to happen. As one person said to Rabbi Akiva, hair would grow from your palm before Mashiach, you know, Bar Kokhba becomes grass, I'm sorry, will grow from your palm, you know, like you'd be dead, like, you know, before he is Mashiach. Okay, great. Now, in the beginning, he still was always courageous, and he was strong, and he was an army of courageous people. So he said, you want to join my army? Sever your finger, you know, cut your pinky off. Rabbis were able to convince Bar Kokhba, can you think of another way? So what was the way, Baruch, remember? Yeah, like, while you're riding on a horse, uproot some tree. Okay, so you have an army of Rambos. And they were successful. They were so successful. How much so? The Roman minhag was, the general would write to the Senate and said, I and my men are doing well, and then go and tell the, you know, how they've been doing in their battles. When Hadrian was fighting against Bar Kokhba, he never had in his letters, I and my troops are well. Because they weren't. Okay? And this led to messianic fever. You know, people said, he's definitely going to be Mashiach. Ooh, defeating the Romans. This tiny little army defeating the Romans. Okay? We have letters distributed by Bar Kokhba in the Israel Museum calling upon, making sure that all the Jews have
Lulavim.
Esrogim, right? The Dalin Minim. We have coins from that time. And what's the cool thing about the coin?
One lulav, one hadas.
One, like who? Shitas? Rabbi Akiva, his biggest fan. So we have the coins with the lulav looking like Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Now, Hadrian had to bring in more troops and more troops, stop battles that were being fought elsewhere, and eventually they defeated the Jews. 580,000 Jews were killed. They didn't even let them bury the bodies. When finally we were able to bury the bodies, we and viewed it as a sign that Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't totally abandon us because the bodies had not
decomposed.
And what bracha was added?
Tova
Meitiv, that we say over like a new bottle of wine, or Tova Meitiv that we say every time we bench, that extra bracha. Tova Meitiv, look at Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't give up on us. I feel obviously if that's considered not giving up, the formation of the state after the Holocaust should at least be, you know, a sign that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has not given up on us, and clearly we should thank a Kodesh Baruch Hu for that, and we will stop over here.
Yeah.